Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mast Sports Radio on Loot Air Student Radio, Laser for short. I'm going to be your host today, Christian Bond. I'm accompanied today by Kellen Westring. Kellen, how are you doing?
Christian, I'm doing great. And if I can take about a minute of this segment and just talk to you about my morning.
We
all have these traditions, and we like to stick to them. For me, every Friday, and this is totally a plug, but I hope you guys respect it, there's a donut shop on Pacific Avenue.
All right.
Frank's Donuts.
Right.
My father, Scott Westring, is the head football coach here. He had a continuing legacy that every Friday at 3 a.m., and that's when this donut shop opens. So these guys are getting in there at 3 a.m., very, very uncommon. Not many donut places open at 3 a.m. But my dad had this long-lasting legacy that he would go to this donut shop every Friday. They called it Frank's Fridays. It's called Frank's Donuts and Muffins on Pacific Avenue.
Nice.
Open 7 days a week.
All right.
3 to 2. And he would bring about 3 to 4 emails with him. And they would just have a great time. They'd talk about the season. They'd talk about their classes. And so I did that this morning. Woke up at 3. That alarm went off early. I eat those donuts. I come back to my bed at about 4 a.m. And I'm just like, you know what, guys? I'm a college athlete. I got to work out. I got to get these donuts out of my system. I got to burn these calories. So I head to Names Fitness Center. Do about an hour of cardio. The donuts are off me. And now I'm doing radio. So it's been a great morning for me so far.
Very nice, Kellen. Glad you're excited to be here. We're also joined today by Drew Artisoni. Drew, what's up?
What's going on, Christian? How are you today, bud?
Doing all right, man. Excited. Let's jump right into it. Let's talk about men's basketball. Your guys' season coming to an end here shortly. You guys are in the playoffs. Final homestand of the season is this weekend. You guys are sitting pretty at 16-7, 9-5 in conference. That's the most wins since 1997 and 98.
Yeah, it's been a great year, and it's been a great run. It's nice to finally, you know, I've been here for 3 years as a junior now, and, you know, played every role on the team. You know, I'm a role player as far as this goes, and it's been fun just to watch, been fun to be a part of. And you know, we have the Wits coming to town this weekend, and
right.
That's always a big game. Big games, everyone gets up for those games, and hopefully we'll have a good crowd out there tonight for this showdown against Whitman, and then tomorrow night against Whitworth.
Right. You guys are in the Northwest Conference Tournament. The berth is secured. You guys are in. That's also the first time since 2010 and 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
What's worked so well for you guys this year?
Well, I just think, you know, we play a very visually pleasing brand of basketball, and if anybody's ever come to one of our games, they know that we move the ball extremely well. We shoot the ball extremely well. I mean, there's been some games where we've shot the ball very well, but, you know, most importantly is that this team plays as a team. Like Coach Dickerson says, he's been coaching forever. Coach Dickerson will never tell you how old he is, but he'll tell you he's been coaching before. He's been coaching way before any of us were born, and before any of us were thoughts in our parents' brains.
Right.
But he says this is the best ball movement team he's coached ever and ever seen play. And I think that's one of the big keys for us being as good as we are.
Right.
You know, Dylan, you come off a huge win against Pacific, 54-41. Your partner in crime, one of your teammates, one of your good friends, Dylan Foreman, steals a pass, the breakaway layup, and the and one. Talk a little bit about that play. Talk about your excitement. Not sure if you were in the game, if you were on the bench, but obviously that's a big, big-time play by Dylan Foreman.
So me and Christian were talking about this a little before we got on the air. We get to the end here of the Pacific game. We beat Pacific pretty handily here on the end of a 14-0 run at our place, and they came back with a vengeance at their place, and they were going tit for tat with us the entire game, hitting shots, moving the ball. They were playing probably the best basketball we've seen them play here, at least since I've been here for 3 years. And we came to the very end of that game, and they have an opportunity, tie game, they have an opportunity to come down and beat us. And they start swinging the ball around, working in motion. And, you know, me and Coach Kovacevic and Coach Gibson were talking on the bench about, you know, maybe we foul their post player who's been 0 for 4 this time. Clock gets ever under 9 seconds. You know, Coach Dickerson kind of looked at us and was like, no, let's just play it out. Let's just see how this is going to go. And so they swing the ball and they swing it back around. And Dylan Foreman jumps the lane.
And he's long. He's very long.
And he's long and good anticipation. And he had a great head for the great game. Always finds his way, you know, always finds his way to the ball. The ball always finds him. He jumps the lane. Probably the worst thing you could possibly coach at this point in terms of fundamentals is to take a gamble with 9 seconds
exactly.
left.
Exactly.
hits the guy on his way there, somehow comes out with the ball. We go ballistic. He gets down. He gets going down the court. Their point guard is fast and all can be. Hats off to Pacific's point guard for playing great transition defense. Comes down to cut Dylan off. Dylan had no angle against the backboard. Gets fouled. Throws the ball up over off the backboard and somehow drops it. And that's how we end up winning against Pacific, which was awesome. It was a great win. Everyone was really excited. And, you know, that was a huge one to get on the road since we've struggled a little bit on the road this year.
Once again, you guys are listening to Mass Sports Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. I'm Christian Bond with Kellen Westring and Drew Artisoni. Just talking a little bit about men's basketball right now and the game against Pacific. You know, no one really scored a whole heck of a lot. I mean, Dylan Foreman and Brandon Lester led the team with 12 points. But you guys kind of, you pulled away, you know, in such a close game, free throw shooting is important. You guys were 10 from 12 from the free throw line that night, and that's going to give you a win when you shoot that well from the free throw line.
Yeah, well, 10 for 12 from the free throw line, but let's not forget 2 for 17 from 3. And this PLU team has been known to lose those games. About 99% of the time, we'll lose those games. We go 2 for 17 from 3. And we move the ball really well, and we shoot the ball really well. And, you know, I always talk about it with our guys, and Coach Dickerson says all the time, you know, we can't live and die by the 3. But this team somehow seems to do that a lot. And I always tell Coach, you know, you live by the juice, you die by the juice. If you're going to live by having a lefty two-guard who shoots the three and averages 16.8 points a game, and Dylan Foreman, who's a sophomore, who's coming off, you're going to run off double screens and catch and shoot the three, if that's what your offense is going to be predicated on, some days you just got to live with that. You know, Brandon and Dylan really grinded it out, got to the free throw line, got to the hole in the second half, really adjusted their games, and we ended up winning a big one. Down Oregon, it was a fun trip.
Yeah, we'll move on to the second part of that trip on Saturday. You guys played Lewis and Clark, and the reason Drew is laughing is because this game had one of the weirdest finishes that we've seen in a long, long time. Lewis and Clark made the decision to foul Brandon Lester, who is leading the league, I think, in free throw percentage.
86-something percent, right? Last time I checked, yeah.
I mean, he's going to make his free throws when he gets to that line. Lester gets fouled with 7 seconds left, makes both of his free throws, and puts PLU up by 3 at this point. Drew, what did a player from Lewis and Clark decide to do?
So Lewis and Clark coach intelligently calls a timeout. Lewis and Clark coach is a fantastic coach. He's done a great job all year, really gets his guys ready to play, really schemed well against us. So he calls a timeout, and he draws up this play to run his point guard off. A ball screen at the free throw line, off ball screen at the free throw line to get his momentum going towards about 6 seconds left, get his momentum going to the hoop, right? And so Eric Swartout picks the guy up off the back end of the screen. The kid comes off and he takes about 3 or 4 dribble hesitations, and we're looking for him to pull. And Eric's kind of trying not to foul him, but stay close enough where he can test the shot. And then the kid put his head down and went and laid the ball up as time expired.
For 2 points. And you guys were leading by how many?
3.
Right.
And everyone on the bench jumped up so excited, like, yes, we clinched finally for the first time in I don't know how many years, you said at the beginning of the broadcast.
Right.
But me and my buddy Marcus Glenn, we're two of the role guys on the bench. His job's to shoot, my job's, you know, energy, play defense,
right,
work the ball, shoot open shots. We're sitting there on the bench, everyone's jumped off, and we're sitting there looking at each other like what? Like, why? Why did he do that? Like, we were so lost. Like, everyone was so excited, but we were just confused. We didn't understand what was going on, and we just didn't get it. It was crazy. And for us to win and clinch in that fashion was just – it's so telling of our basketball team as it is, because we barely got by the night before, and then this night get by on just like a mental error. Like, we clinch, and now we got the third seed locked up, and we got the Wits this weekend, and a big playoff run coming, hopefully.
Right, right.
And I think the point guard for the Pioneers might have been trying to boost his points per game for average on that layup or something like that. But, yeah. Drew, you talk about Brandon Lester, 28 points that game. Christie had a double-double, 13 points, 10 rebounds. Dylan Foreman again with an outstanding game, 14 points. You know, I look at this PLU men's basketball team, and I've got to do the broadcast over the first couple weeks, and I get to do it this Saturday night, folks. Make sure you listen. Another plug right there. But just talk about how well you guys play. There's not many standout guys, but you guys are all just solid, and you guys are all getting it done on the defensive end as well as, you know, like I mentioned, with those rebounds. Just talk a little bit about those guys. That it's not about me. It's about the team.
So Eric Swartout. Eric has taken this – let's start with the point guard. Start with number one. We'll work our way down the line.
Right.
Eric Swartout, he's a point guard. He's a pass-first point guard, fantastic point guard. Doesn't have to score a whole lot to be effective, really spreads the ball out. You go to Brandon Lester. Brandon, league's leading scorer, second leading scorer, I think. Second leading scorer. Shoots the snot out of the ball.
Right. We'll get to him later in the show.
Yeah, that kid's unguardable. We'll get to him later in the show.
Right.
Dylan Foreman. Dylan said it this year. He's played the best basketball of his life in the last 2 years of college. Very deceptively quick. I call him Grandpa Dylan all the time because he plays that bad old man game that you see guys play at the YMCA. Lots of pump fakes, lots of spin moves, lots of touch around the hoop. I love it.
And his form, you watch him in warm-ups, you're just like, is this – I mean, you watch him shoot, you're like, oh, and then you're excited because it goes in.
Yeah, his form is so unorthodox. It's kind of like a slingshot deal, but it's consistent, so it doesn't matter. The ball falls.
Right.
Jared Christie, Wazoo transfer. Was it Washington State? Wasn't playing basketball.
Now, did he play intramurals?
He played intramurals.
Okay.
He's a really fun story.
Yeah, he's part of a. He was part of a fraternity. Partied a little bit too hard at Washington State. Grade slipped. Said, you know what? I miss basketball. I miss being around the guys, and I need to get back to work at my schoolwork. I got a life ahead of me I need to plan for. Came to PLU to become a student athlete and, you know, rebound the ball extremely well. And he's a double-double waiting to happen every single night at will. And then moved to one of my favorite guys, Bryce Miller. Bryce is the best post player in the conference, hands down. You can't. It's undeniable. And the crazy thing about that is that Bryce Miller is a pass-first post.
He's Pau Gasol.
He's Pau Gasol. He's a little bit of Shaquille O'Neal. Like these guys who are
I don't know if Shaq could pass,
who are,
Drew.
Who are, no, Shaq,
you're losing your credibility.
Shaq had good passing to Kobe in their finals run. He threw the ball well. But
they didn't pass it to each other.
Pau Gasol and Marc Gasol are probably the two best comparisons for Bryce.
I agree.
And Bryce is a double-double waiting to happen every single night, too. Great touch around the hoop. He does a good job. And then you go to our bench. Tyson Burr.
Freshman
point guard's been playing great breather minutes, has really matured since the beginning of the year. Kyle Sautel gets every shooter's role in the book. He is a pure shooter until he puts the ball on the ground and you see him go to the rack and he looks like a slasher. The kid has elevators.
It's unbelievable.
For legs. The kid can just elevate. He's been shooting really well, been a big part of our bench production. Then you have
you got to follow him on Snapchat to see some of his dunks.
Yeah, then you have a plethora of role guys. You have Marcus Glenn. Just pure score. Marcus can score the ball from anywhere. You have Seth Anderson. Seth started a lot of games his freshman and sophomore year. He's taken a different role in his junior and his senior year. Has been very helpful for us defensively down the stretch. And then you have me. I move the ball. I take charges. Yep. I shoot open shots. And then you have – and the thing is, too, is that it gets funny because we're so deep that, yes, the ball movement is great between the starting five. But as soon as you go to those next five, next six, next seven guys off the bench, the ball movement just gets better. I don't know where this unselfishness came from, but we're happy that it's here. And we're happy that we're able to do it. So, I mean, that's the team, and we're having a blast. And it's just – it's a great group of guys to be around. Like Dickerson says, he doesn't just recruit good basketball players. He recruits good people.
Right.
And that's what this team's predicated on.
Absolutely. One last note from that Lewis and Clark game. The starting five was perfect from the free throw line. Again, getting yourself some separation in a one-point game, doing it where the points are free.
Yep.
You win. You guys ended up finishing 12 of 13 on the night. It was good free throw shooting like it's been all year long. Part of that reason, we're going to celebrate one player here for a little bit. Brandon Lester. You know, we'll talk about him right now. Brandon Lester is 15 points away from becoming the 25th player in program history to score 1,000 points in a career. Lester is also a junior. Kellen, I'm going to ask you this first.
Right.
From a physical standpoint, what stands out about Brandon Lester?
I think Lester, I mean, he's not very big. You know, he's about 5'10", maybe 5'11", depends if he spikes his hair or not, depends what shoes he's wearing. But the great thing about Brandon Lester is he's so quick. You know, I see him in the fitness center, I see him doing the speed ladder, I see him just getting after his quickness, because the great thing about Brandon Lester is he's already quick, but he wants to get quicker. And that's what separates him, in my opinion, than any point guard in this conference. Like I said, I'm looking forward to Saturday because it's been a couple of weeks since I've been able to watch you guys play, Drew. And the great thing about Lester, he's kind of a mini Ginobili.
Yeah, you know, that's a great comparison.
You know, he's a left-hander, and I remember, you know, my Hoop Fest days back in Spokane, I had a buddy who was a left-hander who wasn't very good. He was my quarterback in high school, threw a great ball as a left-hander, but he was just so, like you said, unorthodox, kind of just scrappy, and when you're a left-hander, you're just kind of different, and that's kind of what separates Lester, and he shoots so quickly, not quite as quick as Curry, but let's be honest, who has a quick release like Steph Curry, but you just talk about Lester from three, such a quick release, he's so quick off the dribble, and he's also Drew, and I think you can attest to this. He's very, very unselfish.
Yeah, Brandon's very unselfish, and that's one of the things that does set him apart as a scorer is that he'll make an extra pass. And that's not a lot of things that you see out of a scorer. And, you know, Brandon struggles sometimes on defense because of his size. He plays against a lot of guards who are bigger than he is.
He's tough, though.
But he's a tough kid.
He's tough.
And he'll try to beat you with his feet and beat you on the ground. Kid's got a great first step, plays really well off a ball screen. And he can get to the hole. And he doesn't get to the hole like, you know, Steph Curry does. Doesn't throw those big floating shots. He doesn't shoot a lot of floaters. But what he does do is he gets his body with you, makes contact, uses your body weight against you, and uses that to create separation to then flip the ball up off the backboard. So it's not – It doesn't look pretty, and Brandon will attest that all the time. It doesn't look like it's a great move, but as soon as you see Brandon go to the hole and make contact with someone, you know he's flipping the ball up, and then you might as well just run back on defense because you know it's Brandon's move, and you know he's going to get it. And as far as him coming off a pick and roll, if you don't hard hedge or you don't and you want to just plug the screen, stay flat, and just dare him to shoot the ball, you're going to lose games.
And that's what's amazing. I think you talk about pick and roll. Let's say Bryce Miller sets a screen. Lester gives it back to Miller. Miller's going to give it back to Lester because he's such a good passer.
Yeah, not only that, but you come off a screen. Bryce can score the ball. Bryce is a pass first post, but let's not depreciate this kid's scoring. Bryce can score the basketball. Bryce had many 20-point games. He can score. But the thing is, off that pick and roll, since they know Bryce is such a threat, they'll run help to Bryce. Bryce will skip the ball across. You have Dylan or Kyle sitting on the backside, open threes. That's why our team's so good. It's just that unselfishness.
All right, guys. I want to let you know that this weekend – POU has Whitman coming to town tonight. The men's game starts at 8. The women starts at 6. The men are ranked 9th in the country. Tomorrow at 6 p.m. for the men, they'll face Whitworth, who is ranked number 3. So it should be a great weekend at Olsen Auditorium. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little women's basketball. We'll also give some love to the swim team because they were absolutely dominant last weekend. All right, welcome back to Loot Air Student Radio. If you guys want to, pitch in your 2 cents about what we're talking about here, you can always call into the show at 253-535-7332. You can also check out what's going on in the MAST website. It's mastmedia.pou.edu, I believe. Right now we're going to jump into women's basketball. They're rolling right now. They're on a 3-game win streak. Their last game was a win at Pacific, 69-65. The team overcame a 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter, which says a lot about the character of the group. Iona Price had 18 points and 5 rebounds. Megan Abdo scored 16 while going 7 of 11 from the field. Samantha Calais, she can shoot as soon as she steps in the gym, and she's probably going to make it. Also, the team shot 53% from the field. So, Drew, I know that you only get to watch, half of their games because you got to go change and get ready for your own. But, what's some of the positive? What's some of the things that you've seen from this team?
Well, that character you're talking about comes straight from the top, comes from Coach Jen Childress. She is, if you ever get some time, Christian, and you really want to be immersed in PLU basketball, go sit in one of her practices. You see how crazy into the game intense she is on the sidelines. It's 10 times that in practice, and the women respond to that. And it's awesome to watch, and that's why they have that, toughness and character to be able to come back from those deficits. I mean, Megan Abdo, she's been a staple, mm-hmm. been a staple of this program now.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, been for 4 years, been the backbone, has always been there for anything, for points, for assists. She's the only one we've seen consistently for 4 years out of the women's program. And then Iona Price, great transfer addition. So much touch around the hoop, so much of a mid-range game, can step out and shoot the three. She's a three-level scorer. And she
can move, too.
And she can move. And, she's a post player, but she's got lateral quickness, has a little bit of handle, can pop up and shoot the ball. And then, Sam, she walks in the gym, she's in range.
Right.
And that ball's it's going up, too.
She's the woman's Jimmy Fredette, almost.
You give her any room, that ball's going up. And, yes, we only get to watch – a small amount of their game. I mean, we watched the whole first half, and then we get to watch the last part of basically the end of the second half or the end of the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
With the changes in the women's rules that are out there this year, they switched to the NBA format, bonuses and quarters now instead of halves. So we get to watch the whole first half and the end of the fourth quarter. And it's the brand of basketball they're playing from last year to this year. It's clearly evident why they're winning games. And Cal, I don't know if you had that stat, what they've done this year since last year. Have they what doubled it?
They were 5-20 last year,
and they've doubled their wins.
They're up to about 9-18.
9-18.
They've doubled their wins. They're and you could tell. I mean, Kellen, we'll ask you. You do the broadcast for their games.
Right.
What can you see that's been different from the year before, even maybe 2 years before when Coach Childress wasn't here? Tell us how they've gotten better.
No question. Christian and Drew. And Drew, I think you just hit it right there on the head. I think the toughness, the mentality of these girls is night and day different. My older sister Jordan played basketball here a couple of years ago, and it's just different. Doing the broadcast, I'd go in the stands as a high schooler watching them play. It's night and day different. And like you said, Drew, when we were in the break there, I would love to sit in on a practice and just watch. Obviously my dream is to become a head football coach someday, but just to watch Coach Childress's coaching philosophy. And you see her, she's just intense. She's kind of like Jim Harbaugh, just intense. And you got to love that about her. And the best thing about it is she has a great coaching staff. You talk about Arvid Isaacson, who is, in my almost my opinion, like a utility coach. Also coaches men's as well as women's, kind of more men's, but does recruiting for both teams, as well as my sister's good friend, Shelly Kilcup, who is a great alumni basketball player here at PLU. And I think Coach Childress would say she would definitely defer it to her coaching staff, but no question about it, just like my dad. With coaching football, you always got to defer it to your staff because it starts from the bottom up, and they do the dirty work, and it makes Coach Childress look good. But no question about it, Coach Childress was a great hire by Lori Turner and has definitely changed his program around. Christian, watching it in the games, it's just almost a different program, and that's what's exciting to see.
Yeah, from what you guys are saying, with Childress coming in, she surrounded herself with the right people, leading to better results for the team. Obviously, they're getting better every year. I guess one of the she's instilled hustle into these girls. Michaela Edgar, she played volleyball here. She's 6'4" tall.
Right.
She, she's long. She's diving on the floor for balls.
I saw her hit the floor last time we were here at home, and we all got excited. I don't think.
Oh, wait. So she hit the floor, and Cam Newton didn't recover that fumble?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's later. That's later. Wow. That's too soon.
Here's the thing I was talking about was that, she hit the floor. How many times are you going to see your 6'4" center, who's a rim protector, go hit the floor, get the ball, and outlet it? You don't see that. That just doesn't happen.
Right.
Even at the men's level, you're not going to see Bryce go hit the floor.
That,
and people don't understand how close the men's and women's basketball team really is. We travel together.
That's right.
We practice back-to-back with each other.
We do a
bunch of events together. Same hotels. So we spend a ton of time together. And so we get excited for them when they're having a great time. And it's been so much fun for this year because, the last 2 years, I'm not going to lie, it was painful to sit there for the first half sometimes because there was no hustle. There just wasn't a lot out of
right.
it. This year, it's completely changed. There's ball movement. There's hustle.
It if you don't mind me saying it, energizes you guys to play well.
Yes. I mean, there's now this sense of hustle that's been put out there by the women's team. And the women's have set this bar. Now we have to turn around and we have to match that bar and exceed it. And, we've seen Dylan Foreman flying into bleachers. I mean, he strained his shoulder, almost dislocated his shoulder at the beginning of the year, flying into bleachers going to say, that's our starting small forward.
Exactly.
He's flying everywhere. Bryce has hit the floor once or twice. I mean, we got guys who come in, just role players who come in, just dive all over the floor. And that's a toughness that has perforated both programs.
Right.
But, and you see that starting now at the women's program. It's even little things the women would get hit with a screen and they just stop. And they let someone go score. Now you're getting hit with a screen and they're fighting over the screen going to contest somebody.
And if I can interrupt you for
different.
A second, the best thing about that, and I think what it attributes to, we all go to the gym. We see these girls in the gym.
Yeah.
You rarely see that. You rarely see these women go to the gym and work out. I'm seeing 4 to 5 players every day that I go to the gym, and they are just competing. They're lifting weights, and it's so fun to see because it's translating to the court.
It's translating, yeah. That's the thing is that, Chris Rice does a great job putting together strength and conditioning programs for both the men and women's team, and you can see it. It's starting to translate. Players are starting to get bigger. Players are starting to get stronger. That mental switch is flipped that, okay, I can use this body mass that I've put on now to affect the game in a better way.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Once again, you guys are listening to Mass Radio. We're talking sports here. We're on Loot Air Student Radio, Laser for short. I'm Christian Bond. I'm alongside Kellen Westring and Drew Artisoni. We're talking about women's basketball right now. They're on a 3-game win streak, but, if you go back to the George Fox game that happened on February 5th, they lost by 2 points to one of the best teams in the nation.
Should have won the game.
They were ahead the whole way. It come down to we talked about Michaela Eggers earlier. I think it was her. She dove on the floor and got tangled up with someone. That's a dead ball technical foul. It resulted in 2 free throws and the ball back. POU loses by 2. It's,
That call really confused me.
Right.
It really confused me. I don't understand. I officiate games at the younger levels. You got to reward kids for hitting the floor and playing. It wasn't. And if you know Michaela, there is in no way possible anything she was doing fighting for that ball was malicious.
Right.
There was no malicious intent whatsoever.
She's not Matt Barnes.
No, she's just going to dive on the ball and rip it away. But it's just, I don't know. That call changed that game.
I'm not a big more victory guy, fellas, but I think Coach Childress is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around. But that's got to be a win at the end of the day. To play the number one or two team in the country that well and should have won the game, that's got to be a win.
From where this program was
right
to where it is now, leaps and bounds, they're heading in the right direction. Coach Childress has them heading in that right direction.
Won't show up on the schedule,
won't show up in the wins and losses
exactly.
record, but if you watch, it's evident.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, we're talking about that three-game win streak. They beat Lewis and Clark 71-66. They got some pretty cool stats from that game. They were down 16 points in the third quarter. They came back and beat them. It's impressive. Sarah Barnes had a career-high 18-point performance. She went 7 of 13 from the field. Another impressive number. The team went 10 of 20 from three.
Wow.
That's the most threes that team has made in 5 years.
Those are Golden State Warriors numbers, or is that PLU's numbers?
No. We were watching that game, and it was so fun because everything was dropping, and we were so excited for it. It was fun because the guys, you know, we'll get pumped behind their bench because we sit right behind their
exactly
bench
right
at away games, and we get excited for them because everything was falling. They could have thrown the ball off the rafters and have found some way to drop in the hoop, and it was so much fun. That may be one of my favorite women's games that I've ever watched.
And I think it's really cool to hear, you know, how excited you are, Drew, because you talk about other Division III teams in the Northwest Conference. I'm sure that a lot of these teams aren't very close. I'm sure they're on the bus. They're in these hotels. They're separate sides. They don't really, you know, converse with one another. So it's so cool to see that you guys are close as a culture, and that's going to elevate both of you guys.
It all starts in the morning because, you know, those 5 a.m. workouts that, you know, all of us college athletes have done, the men and women's basketball team, we do them together.
Right.
With Chris Rice in the morning.
That's uncommon.
Lift in condition with the women. And the women and men are mixed in groups. And they condition mixed in groups. It's the one program. It's not two teams.
That's big time.
Yeah.
Good stuff, guys. All right, so the women have games this weekend. They see Whitman tonight at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow they're going to see Whitworth at 4 o'clock. So get on down to Olson Auditorium and check out some really good basketball, because I expect this weekend to just be fun to watch.
Speaking of weekends, we had a great weekend across all sports. I mean, and, you know, swimming. Can we say enough?
Yeah, we're going to go to swimming right now.
Christian, before you say something, guys, I've been swimming lately about 3 to 4 times a night just for some cardio. Oh, my gosh. It is unbelievably hard. I mean, I have a huge new respect.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I would go to water polo games in high school. I'm like, I can do this. Are you kidding me? I love wild waves, but oh, my gosh, so hard to do.
It was funny to me. I worked the conference championships last weekend. It's, you know, it's your instinct to stay above the water. And people have decided we're going to turn it into a sport. We're going to compete. Who can do this better than the other person?
Right.
And I like that, right? PLU women won their third straight Northwest Conference title last weekend, showing that, you know, we kind of own the pool.
I don't even, to be quite honest, and I know this sounds bad, I don't even look at the articles anymore. I know they're going to win. There's so, like, CC articles pop up on Facebook and on Twitter and stuff like that. I don't even read them because I know what it's going to say. Another dominant
point.
Performance for the PLU
yeah.
Lutes. It's just,
if it says they lose, I say, wait a minute, that's a typo.
Wait, that's a typo. Yeah, that has to be a typo. They're just the way they sweat, and you could just tell just by the way they walk around campus and the way they train in the weight room.
They're,
you know,
different breeds.
It's a different breed
it
of
is.
Person. I have no idea how you move that fast in the water, but, you know, more power to you. That's it's a tough sport. Like, you know, if we ever had to cross condition, I'm talking about going from basketball, if I ever had to condition with anybody else, I would put pads and a helmet on again and condition with you emails before I would ever go get in that
right.
pool.
Well, I told my
ever
dad.
Ever in a million years.
I told my dad, I said after a spring practice, we got to get in the pool. This cardio
crazy.
Is unbelievable.
It's awesome.
It's wild.
I mean, they're great.
Women took care of business. They won 12 of the 18 events and swept all 5 relays. So just, reaffirming that they are really good inside the water. Another note from that, Matt Selman was named the Northwest Conference Women's Coach of the Year for the fourth straight year.
Big, like I said, like we're not surprised.
No.
I mean, it's just one of those things that when you consistently put, you consistently coach teams that have, you know, dominated like PLU Women's Swimming has, you're going to be Coach of the Year. It's just one of those things.
Fun fact, fellas, Matt Selman actually lives right up the street from me.
Good times. Your neighbor's doing work there.
He is doing work. Some great coaches in that neighborhood.
You know, one of the funny things, I was excited to go work the meet because I've never, you know, I've seen a little bit about swimming, you know. When the Olympics are on, it's an Olympic year.
Absolutely.
Swimming's cool for 2 weeks, and then it just kind of goes away. One of the things
That's true.
No,
it's true. The sport does not get the, you know, does not get the exposure.
Did you guys ever see that movie Pride?
No.
With Bernie Mac. It's a swimming movie. It came out about 8 years ago. Big time movie as well. You guys should look that up on Netflix.
Definitely will. I didn't realize that, you know, part of the Coach of the Year, they have signs, and it's, you know, swimmers will, you know, they got to breathe somehow. So when they look up from the water, they look over to the side of the pool, they see their coach. So I'm sitting here watching, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what they're trying to say to each other. The coaches look like airport runway people.
I wondered how you coach
swimming.
Yeah,
how do you coach swimming when they're in the water? Because, like, basketball, I mean, it's pretty evident how Dickerson and Coach Childress coach. It's pretty obvious. They yell and scream and jump up and down, and Coach Dickerson throws his program. Coach Childress stomps her feet. It's pretty evident. How do you coach on the pool deck when you're underwater?
Right. Swimmers can't hear you. They're underwater.
No, absolutely.
You know,
not.
they take their peaks and they see their coach with either both arms up in the air or they kind of look like a third base coach at times too, waving them on.
They don't have waterproof, you know, Bluetooth in
there. Yeah, they can't do it. It's fun to watch. So if you guys ever get a chance to go down and see the POU swim team, go. They're really, really good. You know, we've been talking a lot about the women's team. The men finished third in conference, which is a big deal in itself.
Question.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's wrap this segment up here. POU had a great weekend last weekend, historically one of the best in this school's history. Between baseball, basketball, softball, POU went 11-1, and
wow.
On top of that, the conference title for the women. So it's a good time to be a Loot. It's fun to watch. Get out there and see some POU sports. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to do a little Super Bowl recap since we haven't. We're a little late to the party, but we're going to do that. Kellen's got some thoughts on Cam Newton. And welcome back. We're going to go national with our coverage. I'm Christian Bond alongside Kellen Westering and Drew Artisoni. You know, we haven't got to do a radio show since the Super Bowl happened a couple weeks ago, and Kellen has some thoughts about the way Cam Newton acted all throughout the Super Bowl, really.
Hey, before we go to Cam Newton, I just want to say we have our boss in the studio, big Bronco fan. It was great to see the sheriff win his last one. That's all I'm going to say. I know that's not going to be his. I know that's going to probably be his final Super Bowl, probably his final game. But it's fantastic to see him win his last one.
Yeah, it definitely was. Hey, hello, everybody out there listening to Loot Air Student Radio and Mass Radio. This is Eddie McCoven. Glad to be sitting in on the show today. These guys are doing a wonderful job. And yes, thank you for giving props to the Denver Broncos, champions again. You know,
Von Miller was incredible. It was a great game to watch.
It was, and it's great to have Manning go out on a good note like this. So
I know he hasn't announced it yet, and I know they hounded him after the game to announce it, but we'll get to Cam Newton and the losers here. We'll let Kellen talk about his article a little bit, tell us his feelings about the losing quarterback.
Well, Christian, if I may, you know, that just exploited Drew's insecurities about this topic. You see how he deferred it? He deferred it to talk about Peyton Manning. And I love Eddie, and I respect his opinions, but he kind of deferred. He's not quite ready to talk about Cam because he knows I got some heat. I'm about to bring him.
Respect my opinions, Kellen?
I do, Eddie. You know that, bud. Come on, I'll follow you on Twitter.
All right.
And I'm gonna get some heat for this. I know my girlfriend's kind of a Cam Newton fan. You know, her mom is not, so I think she'll support me with this one. But I'm going to read a little bit of an article that I wrote for the mast here that came out today, folks, that you could take a look at that. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but kind of going to take some certain press clippings that I put in there that kind of will help my argument. The title, and I can almost drop the mic after this, is Cam Newton. He's a great athlete, but not a great leader. And so I open up this article by saying, leadership is defined by how you act in crisis. It's not defined after a win. Now, my grandpa, Frosty Westring, and I know you respect the great Frosty, the legend, Drew, as well as Eddie there with a fist pump, but we're not quite on TV, so you can't quite see it, folks, but it was very acrobatic. My grandpa Frosty used to say, how you win a game shows some of your character. How you lose a game shows all of it. Now, let's rewind the clocks back a year to Super Bowl 49. Russell Wilson lost on a soul-crushing play when he threw a pick to end the game. 30 minutes later, when asked whose fault it was, Russell Wilson said in crisis, I'll take the blame. It's on me. It's a big moment. Anyway, we'll get better from it. Now let's flash forward back to present day. 30 minutes after Super Bowl 40, Cam Newton, who leads by dab constantly, answered the 11 of the 13 questions that he was asked with three words or less. He put his hood on, and it kind of reminded me of a little kid who didn't get dessert. And so he's now talking to his parents now because of it, because he didn't quite get dessert. Yet last week when he was winning, this is Cam we're talking about, his attitude was, look at me, I'm the guy. Now when he faces a little bit of crisis, he pouts as well as walks off the podium during his press conference. Now, of course he was upset after the loss, and as an athlete myself, Drew as well, I can totally understand that. But you don't think Russell Wilson was upset after throwing a pick to lose a Super Bowl? You better believe he was. Yet Russell exemplified class by taking the blame and being the professional in front of the media. That's leadership, and that's what separates Cam Newton and Russell Wilson. Eddie, I'm so sorry to interrupt you there, buddy.
Oh, no, it's all good, Kellen. I was going to say, I know, you know, I definitely agree with you on Russell Wilson being just a class athlete. I mean, the guy, you know, doesn't pull off all these, you know, woe is me and, you know, the crybaby stuff. But when you talked about answering reporters' questions in three words or less, I could not think about Marshawn Lynch.
That's a great counter. Now, okay. Drew, bless your heart, I'm not quite done. Do you mind if I finish?
No, keep going. Let me finish your argument before I tear it apart.
Eddie, I thought you were on my side, dude. Jeez, that's a great call.
Finish your argument before I tear it to pieces.
Well, I guess my counter to that real quick, Eddie, that was before the game. It wasn't after the game. But that's a great point you make up there. In my opinion, Drew, at the end of the day, you want Russell Wilson in your foxhole. Because you know when things get tough, he's not going to quit. Cam won't even die for a fumble. It's the Super Bowl. If this is week three against the Jacksonville Jaguars, of course let that ball go. You don't want to risk a knee injury. You got the rest of the season. You're going to beat, you know, Jacksonville by 50 anyway. But that just didn't quite sit well with me. And I can't imagine how when Cam didn't dive on that fumble, how that sat well with the other 52 Carolina players, including Luke Kuechly. How that sat with them when they're giving their hearts to win this game. Now, Seahawks linebacker Bruce Irving, you Seahawks fans out there, this was just a big-time drop-the-mic sequence. Bruce Irving tweeted after that play that Russell Wilson would have tried to recover that fumble. So, in my opinion, I'm not really the only one who thinks this. Now, this is the last thing I'll say. When Cam broke into this league, you saw him pout, you saw him sulk, and you saw him throw many temper tantrums. And that was because he played on an average team and he faced adversity. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. I look at Cam as a transcendent athlete figure. He's unbelievable, Drew. He's unbelievable. He's in the top drawer of athletes. Love watching him play the game of football. But a lot of that stuff that Cam did 4 years ago has now resurfaced. Your thoughts?
All right, so let's just start. We'll start with the Russell Wilson comments. Russell Wilson, to start with, he's a fantastic quarterback, fantastic NFL player. I'm a 49er fan, born and bred. I would take Russell Wilson in my backfield before I would take Colin Kaepernick, Blaine Gabbert, Alex Smith, Trent Dilfer, Tim Rattay. You name all the guys who played quarterback for the Niners in the last 10 years, I would take Russell Wilson over all of them. I would take Russell Wilson before I would take Colin Kaepernick. In Colin Kaepernick's Super Bowl season, I'd take Russell Wilson. First off, I love Russell Wilson. Second off, let's start talking about your Cam Newton thing. If Richard Sherman conducted himself in the way that Cam Newton conducted himself in the way and won, Richard Sherman would be heralded and put on a pedestal up here in Washington. People love his mouth. People love what he has to say, and it's controversial. As soon as Cam Newton, who does not fit the quarterback mold, says something of that nature, all of a sudden, everyone loses their mind. You can say he looked unprofessional at the presser, but last time I checked, Tom Brady shows up to his presser in a hoodie with a beanie on. And Tom Brady's the prototype quarterback. You know, next on top of that, him being the prototype quarterback, you then go one step further now and you go back 10 Super Bowls and you look at Peyton Manning walks off the field without shaking anybody's hand. At least Cam Newton had the decency walk across the field and shake hands.
Yes.
Now, as far as him walking out on his presser, okay, one of the Broncos defensive linebackers was sitting behind him.
Right.
Across the curtain, talking about their game plan. And
which is adversity.
Which is adversity. But time out. You could tell by how Cam sits in that press conference that he's hearing what's happening behind him, right? You can hear he's listening intently to what's going on behind him.
Called in. They want to make a comment about Cam Newton. Whoever you are, go ahead and talk to us.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. I was listening in to the conversation a second ago, and I just wanted to point out, too, that one of the big things about Cam that's a huge deal right now is that if he is going to be the way he is towards the media after a win, he's just got to do it after a loss. And that's really one of the big things that stood out to me about what was going on with that.
Thanks, Weston. I love you, bud.
No, I agree with that. But the thing is that when you're after a Super Bowl loss and you're at a press conference, the other team is sitting behind him. And did you hear what he said, what the guy said behind him in the presser?
That's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. That he's in that situation.
That's a terrible situation to be in, just as a professional athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you guys 100%.
Right. For those of you who don't realize, you know, the way that they had set up the post-game press conference for these athletes who, you know, they worked their whole lives to get to this point, and there's a lot of emotion coming off after one of those situations, they basically put these guys behind, you know, a screen.
Yeah.
You know, they show the logo, they put them behind a screen, and you can hear everything that's going on right behind you.
And no question about it. Obviously, we're all basically striving to be great journalists here. Some of the questions that Cam was asked weren't great questions.
They weren't great. Like, what's he supposed to say? They played better than us.
No.
We lost. What's he supposed to say?
Sorry to talk so loud, Eddie. The biggest thing I struggle with, Drew, is that Cam never gave the Broncos any credit. That's frustrating.
But what's he supposed to say? I'm just here so I won't get fined?
No, he's supposed to give them credit. Von Miller made him look silly.
No, hey, Von Miller played a fantastic
game. He was rattled after he got sacked.
No, Von Miller played a fantastic game. And yes, Cam Newton was obviously rattled. But here's the deal. You go shove a microphone in Richard Sherman's face and Richard Sherman says things about another player that he's not supposed to say right after a game, you blame the reporter. Cam Newton doesn't sit there for a presser and put in the same terrible situation with the opposite team's linebacker right behind him saying that this is how we were going to beat him. We were going to pack the box, force Cam to be a real quarterback and throw the ball. If you're listening to that behind you, he doesn't get the same pass for walking out of a presser. And who cares if he has a hoodie and a beanie on? So does Tom Brady at half of his
press conferences. Tom Brady never wears a hood. He's got great head of hair.
Oh, stop it. You know what I'm saying? Tom Brady does that stuff. I don't get that. Is that
Richard
just
Sherman?
Just because it's Cam Newton, just because he's such a transcendent athlete, just because he does not fit the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady quarterback mold.
If you're a quarterback, you got to be quarterback-ial. To call my good friend Colin Cowherd, actually, he's not my good friend, he's my hero. You got to be quarterback-ial. You're held to a higher standard. You're not a wide receiver. You're the quarterback. You're the president of the United States. You're held to a higher standard. Now, Richard Sherman, to your point there, Richard, there was a mic stuck in his face 8 seconds after the biggest play of his career. Cam Newton had about 30 minutes to kind of let everything sink in.
After the biggest loss? After the biggest loss of his career. Think about that. Here's the deal, Kellen. You just lost the NCAA Division III national championship, right? Okay? You just lost the NCAA Division III national championship.
We're not going to lose a national championship.
No, you're not. But hypothetically, sit with me.
Okay.
You're sitting here, so you lose national championship, okay? A reporter after the game, you know, is asking you why you didn't get as many touches as you thought you should get and all this stuff, okay?
Okay.
Okay? And you were in bracket coverage the entire night. And you have the corner and safety behind you or right next to you being asked by a different news outlet how they were able, like, how they were so dominant and able to shut down Kellen Westbrook. Are you not going to listen to those comments and not going to try to separate yourself from that situation as fast as you can? You're human. I know Cam Newton does Superman.
You don't think Cam could have sat there for 10 minutes?
Cam Newton does Superman-like things. He's human. Let the guy walk away from a bad situation.
Go to the next day, Cam's quote, show me a good loser and I'll show you a great – or show me a sore loser and I'll show you a loser.
A loser.
Here's the quote. I got the quote for you. Okay. Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser.
Come on, man.
Well, here's the deal. He's making the point that no matter what he did, he still lost. Well, what was that going to do?
If it makes any difference, I don't want to be good at losing.
Exactly.
No. Believe me, I'm as competitive as they come. Ask my girlfriend. Ask my mom and dad. But I I'll say this quote here. I hate losing more than I like winning.
Absolutely.
But Cam Newton, so many kids look up to Cam Newton. Literally, he's about 6'4". Jeez.
Yeah.
But you got to listen. You are an influence on these kids. If my son, if I'm blessed to have a son someday, and he strikes out, do I want him throwing his helmet? Do I want him wearing a towel on the bench? Do I want him not talking to me when I take him to KFC and ask him what he wants to order? No. I want my son to flush it and worry about the next game. Cam Newton, I mean, he is you have to be able to be in your foxhole. Cam Newton is not in my foxhole. I don't think he's in Luke Kuechly's foxhole. You take Luke Kuechly, you put him in a room by yourself, he will say, nope, you know, he's hot. He's too hot when he wins. And he's when the camera's on, he's one way. When the camera's off, he's another way.
All right, Drew, wrap it up here, buddy.
To Cam's point, could Cam have handled the situation better? Yes.
Thank you.
But I don't think he should be crucified in the media for him being crucified the way he was, and him and just because of what he said. Yes, he said, if you want to keep me from doing all this stuff, keep me out of the end zone.
Right. I love that. That's competitive.
And yes, they did. Okay. But this is his
first time, give
the Broncos credit.
Right.
But this is his first time in this situation. I mean, yes, he could have handled it better, but the guy's human.
The last thing I'll say about this topic before we wrap up here, folks, is not many journalists and not many news guys, including Colin Coward, who's my guy, not many guys gave Cam credit for shaking Peyton's hand. I got to give him credit for that because, like you said, Peyton Manning, who's been squeaky clean, and we'll talk about next week about these allegations about Tennessee, Peyton Manning walked off the field.
Yeah, he walked off the field. Didn't even shake Tom Brady's hand.
Right, he didn't shake his hand, but he gave him credit after. But
afterwards.
Cam didn't do that. But Cam Newton did shake Peyton's hand.
Yes.
I respect the heck out of that.
Yes. Christian, you can take us out here because I know we're almost out of time.
But Christian, who won, bud?
And our boss.
I don't know. I guess my angle on that whole story was that Cam Newton was painted to be the villain from,
He brought it to himself.
Well.
He brought it upon himself.
Every story needs a villain, and he was painted as such from the start. People were looking for him to make mistakes.
And he did exactly that. He did a little bit. He had some drops as a receiver. Yes. I'll be the first. He had some drops, so don't just say it's all his fault.
But he made mistakes.
Exactly.
Made mistakes in the way he played. Made mistakes in the press conference afterwards.
Gosh, I want one more hour, guys.
Yeah, we'll do it soon.
We'll do it soon. Eddie's sitting here giving us the finger. Time to get off the air. It's been a blast, guys. Thank you so much for listening.
All right. I've been Christian Bond.
Kellen Westring, thanks so much, folks.
And Gerard Asani, thank you, guys.
We're out of here. See ya.